Welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California's Voices of Reform Project, promoting informed discussion of issues related to California state governance and civic engagement. We are very pleased to be co-hosting today's program with California Common Cause, and we also welcome our listeners on the radio. The Commonwealth Club's Voices of Reform programs are made possible by the generous support of the James Irvine Foundation, the Wallace Alexander Gerbody Foundation, and Commonwealth Club members. I'm Zabre Valentine, director of the Voices of Reform Project, and your chair today. You may have heard Governor Schwarzenegger talk about why he thinks California should change the way it determines the shape of political districts, also known as redistricting. During today's program, state legislators who have introduced redistricting legislation will explain their views on this topic and discuss their proposals for reforming California's redistricting process. How important is this? What are the essential elements of the debate? And is there the will to compromise? We are honored to have with us Senator Alan Lowenthal from the 27th State Senate District, Republican leader Kevin McCarthy from the 32nd Assembly District, who will be joining us shortly, Assemblyman Joe Canciamilla from the 11th Assembly District, and Assemblyman Keith Richman from the 38th Assembly District. Our program will be moderated by Tony Quinn, co-editor of the California Target Book, a nonpartisan guide to California legislative elections. Dr. Quinn has more than 30 years of experience with California's state government. He has served as director of the Office of Economic Research in the California Department of Commerce, as chief consultant for elections and reapportionment, and then as caucus political policy director, both with the Assembly Republican Caucus, as a member of the California Fair Political Practices Commission, and as an assistant to the California Attorney General. He was a member of the redistricting staff of the state legislature in 1971 and 72, and has been an expert witness in several court cases involving reapportionment and election issues. Dr. Quinn has also authored numerous articles on demographics and policy trends. He holds a doctorate in political science from Claremont Graduate University. And now, I'm very pleased to turn the program over to Tony Quinn to moderate today's discussion.
Thank you very much. My job here is to facilitate a discussion of this somewhat arcane issue. But this is an important period of time because today, Thursday, and I believe Friday and perhaps over the weekend, supporters of the Costa Reform Initiative will be turning in their signatures. And I gather that that means that this matter will go to a public vote, either in a special election this fall or, if not then, the next regular election next year. So we're almost certainly going to have some kind of a public vote on this issue. The three legislators who are here today have been working on this for the last couple of years, and they have put together a bipartisan working group. And they have worked on a proposal of their own, which I'm going to ask them to describe in a minute. I think that what I really would like to get them to focus on, because they are the people in charge here, is can we make a deal? Is it possible for a legislative solution to go forward that may make a special election this fall that may make it not necessary? Or are we almost certainly going to have a major partisan battle over this issue? And I think with that, I'll turn it over to our first legislator, Senator Lowenthal.
Thank you, Tony, and I'd like to thank the Commonwealth Club for organizing this forum to present and discuss the various proposals on redistricting. As many of you know, the one that I have authored, SCA 3, is a reintroduction of ACA 19, which I introduced in September of 2003, which came out of the work of the bipartisan group, which had six Republicans and six Democrats also as co-authors on the bill. Specifically, what SCA 3 does is create a self-executing independent redistricting commission to draw the district boundaries. It's a panel of 10 retired appellate court judges, establish a pool of 25 citizens for the appointment to the independent redistricting commission. From the pool of 25 candidates, 10 of which are Republicans, 10 of which are Democrats, and 5 of these citizens are independents or declined to states or third party, the leadership of the legislature, the Senate pro tem leader, the Speaker of the Assembly, and the minority leaders of each House appoint one of the commissioners from their respective political parties. So you're going to have then two Republicans and two Democrats on the commission. These four commissioners select the one independent or the declined to state person who serves as the chair and of the Independent Redistricting Commission. To govern the reapportionment process, the districts must be drawn according to strict criteria, with following from communities of interest at the top of the list, Federal Voting Rights Act of 1965, and also to try to make districts as competitive as possible. The redistricting in SEA 3 begins after the reapportionment, which occurs after the next census. This is a fair proposal, SEA 3. It already has bipartisan support. It's been modeled after the Arizona proposition, Proposition 106, which passed in Arizona in the year 2000. It's been vetted fully. The Center for Democratic Studies and DEMOS, which is a public policy research and advocacy group, carried out a comparative analysis of the Costa, the McCarthy, and the Lowenthal, and they said that the SCA 3 is the best starting point for an independent redistricting commission. They concluded that the requirement that all hearings be public should inspire a high degree of public confidence. And it's also the proposal that's been supported by Common Cause of California and the League of California, League of Women Voters. So I think it's a good starting point for the discussion. It's very similar to what we've worked on, and the Assembly version is almost exactly the same. And that's because we all worked together on this version, and this is the Senate version, and the Assembly version will be described. It's slightly different, but since we all were partners in the original development, I turn it over now back to you and to my Assembly colleagues.
Okay, well, now we'll hear from the Assembly side. Assemblyman Cancimilla, can you give us a sense of to what degree you see that as the direction that we ought to go, and does your proposal basically follow the same guidelines?
Well, Alan's absolutely correct. The work of the group, which was started 2 years ago, was focused on coming up with what we viewed as the best option that a bipartisan group of members could come up with. And the fact that we were able to agree on a process that takes the responsibility for redistricting away from the legislature, I think, was a demonstration that you can come to a bipartisan agreement on redistricting if you work hard enough at it. Our Assembly version is only slightly different from the Senate version now, in that ACA 19, which was the old version, and now ACA 5, which is the new version, simply does not have the nesting provision, which is in Senator Lowenthal's, and that simply means that each Senate district would have two members of the Assembly elected from that district. And then we make some modifications based on what's been done in Iowa, where the redistricting would not be subject to use of data that indicated political affiliation, prior election results, addresses of incumbents, and any other demographic information other than just simply population. So we make those two changes. You asked if we saw the opportunity for any of these perhaps moving forward. We're clearly not the ones that are going to make that decision. If we were, we would have done this 2 years ago or 1 year ago. We wouldn't be faced with what many of us consider to be a dramatically inferior proposal, which would go on the ballot, which would be the Costa Initiative. It's not up to us. It's up to the leadership. It's up to negotiations between the pro tem, the speaker, the two Republican leaders, and the governor. They're going to have to decide whether or not they can come up with a legislative fix that makes more sense than the initiative that's before the public. Now, can we get there? Clearly, the bipartisan group has demonstrated that Democrats and Republicans can get there. We can reach an agreement. It's a question of whether there's the political will and desire to come to an agreement on redistricting, or whether this is just simply going to be another piece in the long-running feud between the governor and other interests. I'm hopeful that there can be an agreement. I'm hopeful that there'll be the will to come up with an agreement. But barring something dramatic, I would be hard-pressed to see at this point that we could come to a resolution. The bill that we came up with originally, ACA 19, 2 years ago, could not even get out of its first committee hearing. We couldn't get a second for the measure We got a motion by the chair at that time, Assemblymember Longville, simply as a courtesy to allow a little more discussion to take place. But we couldn't even get a vote on the measure. And that indicates, I think, the level of resistance that we'll find within the House to anything moving up.
That's kind of a depressing report, because both of these gentlemen represent the majority party. I think we should hear from what the minority party has to say. So we'll turn this over to Assemblyman McCarthy, the Republican leader. We've been talking today a little bit about this subject in the light of the fact that it appears that the signatures are now ready for the COSTA initiative, which means that this will probably be on either a November ballot or next June's ballot. And get your sense about how much that changes the dynamics of the whole issue and whether you see the possibility that there could still be a legislative deal.
Could there be a deal? I say yes, there could be. Will there be a deal? You know, Dr. Phil says past behavior is best indication of future behavior, so the answer would be no. It's not like these bills are new. I introduced this bill the very first day I entered the legislature, long before I was leader, very first day entering. Because structure dictates behavior, and the structure in the way we elect people is dysfunctional. So hence, you have a dysfunctional legislature. But you have a dysfunctional legislature that controls power by politicians. This isn't a Republican and Democrat issue. If this was a Republican and Democrat issue, then the real question is, could we ever come together? The question being here is, this is a politicians versus the people. There's a reason there's only a few of elected that are standing here. Two that are reformers all the time. He was a part of it as well. I champion this cause from day one. Do I have members in my own party upset? Yes. Because why? Because they're safe. 153 and not one changed hands. But we have an example of it being different. Not that the legislature ever came together to ever make it different. Why? They broke down. So how did it happen? We had a structure where the legislature couldn't touch it in the 1990s. And what happened in the 1990s? You had 10 congressional seats that were competitive. You had 14 assembly seats that were competitive. In a decade, they would flip Democrat, Republican, Democrat. You could flip it. The people owned the power to actually make an incumbent lose if they didn't do the job right. You had 5 Senate seats that were competitive. You've never had it the way it is today. I don't believe Russia can ever make it as safe as it was in their height of communism as it is today. But the argument and the power being, can we make a deal? The only way somebody wants to make a deal is to empower the politicians more. Yeah, I could make a deal where they would come to me and say, yeah, let's do it in some far-out year, but let's change term limits now. Let's let people start going further, and then now they're fighting over, would the clock start now or would you start it later? My argument is, why are you even talking about that subject? If you agree redistricting is bad, if you agree that the system is wrong, that politicians actually pick the voters, why would you ever allow these people to continue onward? Why wouldn't you say, no, first let's have competitive races, and whoever wins those races, because the people have decided, then you can have the debate about term limits. But nobody wants to get there. Why? Because they have protected themselves. Republicans and Dems cut a deal together. They know they did it. They admit that they did it. You can look at lines, and I can tell you where somebody lives and where someone else lives. And because of term limits, they protected themselves all the way through. So can we get a deal? No, because politicians have to do what is right in the system, and they pick themselves over the people. So is this the way why Hiram Johnson would rise up today? Yes. This is the cause. This is the monopoly. This is why Teddy Roosevelt would rise up again as well. You got to make it different. But I have a disagreement actually with Mr. Lowenthal's bills. I appreciate that he's championing this. But if you're going to change the structure, if your son calls you, and I have a young son and a young daughter, and they broke their arm at school, you'd say, yeah, your arm's broken, but let's wait until you have the next doctor's appointment to fix it. You'd fix the problem now. Why do you wait later? Someone argues that, oh, my God, the census problem. You're living under those numbers right now. Do I hear you crying about that? You have congressional lines where people pay $20,000 apiece to actually draw them. It's quoted in the paper. They're not running from the fact. You had a race where you had 153 none changed hands. If the winner got 55 and the loser got 45, that's just a 10% difference, and people don't even think that's competitive. You know what the average difference in races in the state assembly? 34%. In Congress, 41%. We don't just have broken arms. We have destroyed the body here, the body of government, the body of the people having this government. And so you need to set a criteria. If you're going to do this, you do it right. Set a criteria where you keep cities and counties whole. Why? Because it's not saying I'm picking Republicans, Democrats, or independents. You're saying you drive over the same potholes, you breathe the same air, you go to the same school, you pay for the same gas. So you know what? Those are the issues. Those are the issues that should be focused on, not picking and choosing because someone lives on one side of the street and somebody lives on the other. And then you should say you have 40 senators, 80 assembly members, put two in every one. Make it competitive. And we have a record that shows that it works. We have 1990. And then someone would argue, oh, my God, if you had a special election, you couldn't do it before 06. What did we do last year? We moved the primary from March till June. And we did it in 1990 where the politicians didn't do it. They did it in 2 months by special masters. What computer did you have in 1990? I bought mine at Radio Shack. I think it was a Tandy. You know, it's much different today. But the only time it takes a long time to do redistricting is when you're gerrymandering the system and you're more concerned about what politicians want to represent than what the people want. If you set a criteria, it doesn't matter really who draws those lines as long as it's not politicians. Set a criteria, dictate a structure that's fair to the people and that the people have the vote at the end of the day. I'm passionate about it. I'm sorry.
Well, now that you've described a system that's totally broken down, we'll see whether Mr. Richmond can put it back together again.
Well, thanks, Tony. I also want to thank the Commonwealth Club. I'm not sure I can put it back together again. I've been trying for going on 5 years now, and in fact appreciate Assemblyman McCarthy's comments that I, along with Assemblyman Cansamilla, are reformers all the time. Let me give you a little history and an understanding of why an independent redistricting process is so critical for good government in California. Our bipartisan group 2 years ago, and in fact even longer, recognized the dysfunction in the California legislature, the polarization, the partisan gridlock that the legislature is in, and really the inability for the legislature to address those issues that the state of California faces, whether you're talking about education, healthcare, affordable housing, transportation, infrastructure, and investment. All of those issues that are important to all of us are not being addressed by the California State Legislature. Our bipartisan group took this issue on a couple of years ago. We felt it was critical for good government and a fundamental political reform, independent redistricting, that was critical for the future of California. Many of us also felt that there were additional political reforms that were critical also in addition to independent redistricting, including lengthening term limits. And some of us also supported an open primary, I'd like to say, because an open primary, in fact, would have made all 80 assembly seats and all 40 Senate seats competitive in the state of California. What happened a number of years ago is the legislature put in gerrymandered districts throughout the state of California and put in safe seats, safe Democratic seats and safe Republican seats. And in fact, as Assemblyman McCarthy was saying, this past November's election was the best example of what that did. Out of 153 legislative seats, 80 in the Assembly, 20 in the State Senate, and 53 congressional seats, none changed hands. And what this gerrymandering has done is it's resulted in a very extreme representative, extreme dialogue here in Sacramento with representatives that come from the extremes of both political parties. Rather than representatives who want to solve problems and come up with solutions to those problems that the state of California faces. And so we felt it was critical to put in an independent redistricting process to address this issue. Assemblymember Cansamilla, I, and at that time Assemblyman Lowenthal, now Senator Lowenthal, along with many others in the bipartisan group, proposed an independent redistricting process that was based upon the Arizona model largely with a number of other changes. But we worked both with Bruce Kane at Berkeley. We worked with individuals down at the Claremont Institute to put in the best type of redistricting process we could. When we introduced that measure 2 years ago here in the California State Legislature, as Senator Lowenthal said, we were not even able to get a vote in the committee. We were not even able to get a vote. We got a courtesy motion by the chairman, Assemblyman Longville, but we were not even able to get a second on the motion so that a vote could be taken in the legislature on an independent redistricting process. The difficulties in getting an independent redistricting process through the legislature are just another example of the dysfunction that exists here in the California State Legislature. This is an example of good government. It is not a Republican or a Democratic issue, and we had six Republicans and six Democrats that were co-authors on this measure. The measure that we introduced didn't move along. The measure that Assemblyman McCarthy introduced didn't move along. And that's simply a reflection or another symptom of the dysfunction that occurs in the legislature. And whether this independent redistricting process is going to move forward through a legislative compromise, or if it doesn't move through a legislative compromise but needs to go to the ballot directly to the people through an initiative process, I believe that an independent redistricting process is critical for the people of California for good government. And so I'm hopeful, I remain optimistic, I always remain optimistic, that we can get a legislative solution here in Sacramento for independent redistricting. It's important for the future of our state. It's an important political reform that I hope will lead to representatives who are going to better represent the broad middle of the political spectrum rather than simply being driven by the special interest groups and the extremes on both sides of the political spectrum. It's critical that we get representatives here who are going to want to solve problems rather than just maintain the status quo and the dysfunction and the polarization that currently exists here in Sacramento.
Well, thank you very much. Now it's my turn to ask a couple of questions on this matter. We're going to go for a few minutes on that, and then there'll be some questions from the audience. And just kind of a reminder for what we're doing here, we're listening to state legislators discussing their proposals for changing the way California determines the shape of political districts. This is hosted by the Commonwealth Club's Voices for Reform. Issue that seems to be, that seems to divide these different groups here is when can this be done? Assemblyman McCarthy says, well, we could do it for the election of 2006 because the primary is moved until June, which is true. The county clerks say, well, if you had an election this fall, there's not enough time to do all the reprecincting and do all the things need to be done, so we can't do it in 2006. The earliest is 2008. I'd like the panel maybe to discuss a little bit the practicalities of trying to do a mid-decade redistricting and also the politics of it. Is that an absolute stopper as far as the majority party goes? I mean, if we're going to push for a mid-decade, does it mean that there's no way that there can be a legislative solution at all? Maybe Senator Lowenthal could start with
yeah,
that.
Well, let me start with the second part. And I don't think it's just personally the majority party. I think that both parties voted for a redistricting plan in the year 2001. It passed, but with overwhelming support, the existing redistricting. I personally did not vote for the plan. But I think that redistricting is a non-starter in the legislature if it's a mid-decade redistricting. One is we have to understand that this would be a historic step for a legislature to put on the ballot giving up complete power over the redistricting, such as either the Assembly version or the Senate version, which is a self-executing legislature, has no role after the initial selection of the commissioners in any part of the redistricting proposal. You're not going to get the legislature to give up that kind of control and at the same time say we're going to violate the federal constitution and the Voting Rights Act of one person, one vote. And that is, there has been such dramatic changes in where people live that especially the majority party is going to say that to do a mid-decade redistricting is going to be like a Texas-style massacre and the same thing that occurred in Texas, and the party is not going to do it because they're going to say we're going to give up the right of each citizen to be represented in a fair way in a redistricting, and that the only way you can do it would be after the next census comes out. Even at that, as Assemblymember Canciamilla and Assemblymember Richmond have indicated already, it's going to be very difficult to get support out of the legislature to begin with. And so I'm saying if you want support out of the legislature, you've got to really acknowledge that we cannot disrupt what the one-person, one vote, and the legislature's just not going to go there.
Maybe if Assemblyman McCarthy, who I think may have a slightly different view on that matter, a couple of things, though, just to lay it out. First of all, the issues that are raised by the county clerk saying we can't do it in 2006, they're the ones I would presume that courts have listened to in the past. So,
Was that the same argument they made with the recall?
No, I mean, the argument was that they made in 1971 and 81 when I was involved with this was you needed to know your districts for a June primary at the beginning of the year. And according to our code now, people have a right to begin running for office at the beginning of the year. So the argument is there's not enough time in 2006. Can you just address that?
I don't take that as an argument. You just had a San Diego mayor resign. They're going to have a recall. Should they say no? We should wait till the next decade so everybody knows who's going to run. We look at the transportation issues. Every time you vote on some new money, when do you ever see the road built? Hopefully your children see it. I mean, this is the same argument we're making. You have to reform this entire system. The argument that the registrars are making, and I understand that maybe sometimes people have to work harder, I have no problem. If somebody wants to make the argument that it costs too much, that's the argument they made during the recall. It's going to cost $70 million. You know what? I saw people in Iraq line up and people lose their lives for democracy. I have no problem from a conservative Republican allocating more money for democracy. When the people have the vote, I think it's a good thing. I think people save more money in the long run. So, no, let's not have it because it may cost us so much money. We have a $10 billion deficit, and nobody's doing anything about it. You know what the other Thursday when we were in session, what we talked about, this so-called legislature? We debated Social Security, something that we have nothing to say over a resolution. Then we went to a resolution about who's going to be on the next stamp. Then we debated who has the right to pluck your eyebrows. Now, how much did that affect your life? Didn't anybody ever call? Didn't the registrars tell me that we wasted money? Yeah, we wasted money that day. And that's the frustration that we have. We are not focusing on what needs to be focused on because nobody is afraid of losing. You are safe no matter where you go in this process. Why? Because the politicians have protected themselves. We can make this happen because in March, just take a for instance. Say you have a special election in November, all right? You start moving the process then. The only times it takes a long time to redistrict is when you do it like last time. When you go around, you ask each individual first what cities they want to represent, not what the people want to represent. You have a criteria inside this initiative that says keep cities and counties whole, a criteria that you have to nest 40 senators, 80 assembly members. You know what? You don't have to go talk to elected officials because they're not kings, they're not queens, they don't own the seats. It doesn't matter what they think or what they care. It matters more what the criteria says. So no one has to get in a room. And you're taking the one person, one vote. It goes back to 1953, you know, trees don't vote. We're living under that same census as we live right now. There are not equal as we're going forward as the population grow. So are we going to have a new one? No. We're going to keep this broken system, keep going further. How much more money is that going to cost you in the long run? Move from March to June. How much time did I know of what my district, of the current district that I represent looked like prior? Remember when we had the redistricting? It wasn't that long a time frame when they threw it right in there. Did the people have a chance? Yeah, you have a campaign. You have a campaign, and the difference will be is people get elected in primaries in the current system. With a redistricting, a fair one, people will get elected in a general election. That's a long time away. You change the filing deadline. You have the election in November. You start moving through the process. You can have them up there in 1st of January when people are supposed to file because you're moving it back to June. And I have no problems if you wait a little longer. I'm willing to wait a few weeks so people have a say. I'm not willing to sit back as someone that's trying to protect politicians and say that 2 weeks is too long, so let's give somebody 8 more years. How many more elections are going to be in 8 years?
How many more times are we going to protect somebody when we all admit that there's a problem? That's what's wrong. You shouldn't sit and ask us really what we care about, because really this process should go back to the people. We are the ones messing the system up. Unfortunately, these are the ones here that believe in reforming this system. It's all these other members that want to protect themselves.
Well, Assemblyman Kent Jamila, that sounds pretty easy. You want reform? Let's have it now. So why don't you tell us whether the Democratic side of the aisle will go along with reform now.
Mr. Quinn, let me first put a disclaimer, because I get in trouble many times with my colleagues, which is probably clearly demonstrated by where I am today and within my caucus. So I am speaking only for myself. My views don't represent any particular group, segment, or association within my caucus. They are simply my views. And I don't care whether there's a mid-decade redistricting or not. I think that, frankly, it would make some difference in terms of the cost, and I don't think you get an accurate redistricting without doing a full count. But at the end of the day, I think that it's more important to have independent redistricting than it is to argue about the very specific points in it. And I'll point out, with all due respect to the Republican leader, when the parties want to do something, when they decide together, the leadership and the power structure around here decide they want to do something, mountains move, the heavens open, and it happens. When both sides decided that they wanted to kill the open primary, that was something that both parties lined up against, within hours, the bill went from drafting through committees, off the floor of the Assembly, through committees in the Senate, off the floor of the Senate, and on the ballot. When both sides decide they want to frustrate the democratic process, they can certainly come up with an agreement. If both sides decide they want a independent redistricting measure, we could get it done in one day. Whether it's mid-decade, off-decade, doesn't really matter. Both sides decide it'll happen.
It sounds like to me that one of the players that we ought to be talking about here is the person who's at least making it possible now for a ballot measure to go forward on this, and that is the governor, who has championed this, and I think we would say who has raised the issue. This is generally a pretty arcane area, and suddenly everybody is talking about this, and I think the governor gets a lot of credit for that. Assemblyman Richmond, you're sort of thought to be fairly close to the governor on this and other subject matters. He said last week that, well, maybe the mid-decade didn't matter so much, just getting it done. Do you see the possibility of the governor engaging with the Democratic leadership in such a way that he and the leadership can put together some kind of a deal?
Well, Tony, let me just say I've not discussed the specific issues of redistricting with the governor or the timing. I'm somebody who also believes that we ought to do redistricting as soon as possible. I think a mid-decade redistricting would allow for a number of elections under an independent redistricting process, and we ought to do it as soon as possible. I think that the issue of cost is really just a non-issue. I do think that the importance of getting representatives here in Sacramento who are elected by the people and chosen by the people rather than the other way around, where the politicians pick the voters, is critical. I think fundamentally, I do believe that an independent redistricting process that's done as soon as possible, mid-decade, is important. But fundamentally, for the long term of California, the most critical issue is for good government is putting in an independent redistricting process. Within our bipartisan group, I was somebody who always pushed for a mid-decade redistricting starting 2 years ago. I think it would be important to do it as soon as possible because I think that the system is broken here. The legislature is dysfunctional, and in my view, there is no reason to wait 6 years to try and begin to solve the problems here in Sacramento. I think it is very important. It would be a real shame to go through an entire decade without having the legislature address any of the fundamental issues that the state of California faces. Most importantly, though, is the fact that we get an independent redistricting process put in place. Whether ultimately it would be in a compromise that included a mid-decade redistricting or didn't, for the long-term benefit of California, the important issue is an independent redistricting process.
And I want to ask Senator Lowenthal to respond to that point, but let me put it in a little bit different terms. This is just about the only issue on which Nancy Pelosi and Tom DeLay seem to be on the same side. And that is, the members of Congress want no part of this. As far as they're concerned, California should have nothing to do with drawing district lines. You're a member of the majority party here, but your Democrats are the minority party in Washington. Doesn't it make some sense, maybe, that they ought to rethink that and say, look, it wouldn't hurt us if we had new district lines in California. We might actually pick up a few seats. If we picked up a few seats here, maybe we would be on our way to winning control of the House. So I wonder if you would just deal with a little bit of the politics there.
Wow. It's hard enough dealing with the politics here in the state, trying to get support for an issue. Why our leadership, you're asking, why does the majority leadership not want to do? I think the difference is that the Democratic leadership in the Congress from California, the Democratic leadership, does not want to give up that power in general. And I think the Republican leadership is very, very frightened from California of a mid-decade also. And I think there are differences because of the thought that the gerrymandering that took place in the 2001 election favored the status quo over the demographic shifts that occurred in the state, and that ended up favoring Republican congressional districts. And so that's really what happened. So I think for different reasons, both do not want to do it. Both like the fact that since the Congress does not do their own redistricting, it's each state is required to not only redistrict the state legislature, and that's really what the governor really came to us and was really talking about, the state's issues in terms of the state Senate and the state assembly. We also do the congressional, and they're very frightened that they won't have a say over what takes place at the state. And the more it gets removed from the state legislature, the more it gets removed from the congressional, the arm of the congressional delegation. So I think both parties, for different reasons, do not really want to do it.
Well, now I think we should probably turn over for some questions from the audience, but our three assembly members have had to leave because they have, they will
That's
be.
That's why the Senate
will
is
be
the
back.
Upper
they
house.
They have to go vote on the floor. That's what they do here. They actually vote. Actually, this is a fairly good first question. I guess since Senator Lowenthal is here, he can respond, and maybe I'll respond too. And this deals with the balkanization of the state. You know, this country is supposedly red and blue. That's what now how we define ourselves. But California, being this special state, manages to be both red and blue at the same time. While we are a very heavily safe Democratic state, supposedly, it has been the last few elections, at the top of the ticket, there's a lot of Republican growth, actually, in the interior parts of the state, and continuing Democratic growth on the coast. If you take a look at the counties now, most of them are pretty safe for one party or the other. So the questioner asks us, what about the balkanization of California? Does this really mean anything? Does drawing new districts really have any effect at all when you're trying to draw them in this heavily blue and red state, or are we actually trying to create purple where there really isn't any?
Well, I'm going to answer that in two ways. The first one is, we're not going to create seats, every seat that's competitive because of where people live. That is not really what we'd like to see is more competitive seats. But what we really want to have is a legislature that really reflects communities of interest and protects those communities of interest, and that we do not draw lines to disenfranchise folks. So that's the first issue. The second one is you talk about a red state and a blue state, but I really think we have to add the third, and that's the white state. So we're really talking about red, white, and blue. And what do I mean by that? The fastest growing party in California are declined to states or independents. They are completely cut out of this process now. And so what our redistricting proposal does, by having a five-member commission, two Republicans, two Democrats, and the chair of the commission being an independent, you're going to get the voice of people who are not aligned with either party being the swing difference. And that's what's happened in California. They're the people that decide whether we go red or blue. Not the reds, not the blues. It's the whites. It's those folks who are maybe lean one way or another towards one party or the other, but they will vote independently in each election. Both Democratic Party registration is down, Republican Party registration is down in the state, independent declined to state registration is up in this state, and our redistricting should reflect that, not disenfranchise those folks.
I'm not entirely persuaded, though, that the system where you have the legislators choosing the redistricting members really achieves that. Everybody in this legislature is either Republican or...
But you're only choosing two. Remember, what we're trying to do is get two. You're getting the courts in my proposal to select 10 distinguished citizens who are Democrats. So they're really giving us the pool. 10 distinguished citizens who are Republicans and 5 distinguished citizens who are not aligned with either party. What you're asking is from this list, and it's a very narrow list that comes from the judiciary, that then the leadership of our parties, who have now the complete control over it, should have only very, very limited, and they should choose from that list. And that's what they did in Arizona. And those four must choose the fifth member, who is. And so you get a balance. But they don't choose people who do not come from a list that comes from the judiciary of distinguished citizens. So we're not just saying, just pick your own friends. We're saying that let's get a list of people who would be distinguished, who follow certain criteria. Let the leadership now, instead of drawing the lines, instead of making input in terms of how the districts will be drawn, impacting the commission itself, that's the only role, and it never comes back to the legislature. In Mr. Costa's, the legislature will have a vote on it. It has to go to a vote of the people. We're saying no. The legislature is completely out of it once the commission is started and it becomes self-executing.
That's the question now. Our two members of the assembly are back. One of the factors of the cost initiative that's not been focused on a lot is it comes back for another vote of the people. There's question if you got a legislative redistricting plan that either party didn't like, would they then at the next election go through and kill it? So could we have new district lines for the 2006 election, then a whole second set of new district lines for 2008? I think that's part of the cost initiative that's not been focused on. And maybe you get a little sense of both, maybe Assemblyman Richmond on that and then Assemblyman Cancimilla.
Well, I do think that it is absolutely fine to put a redistricting plan to the vote of the people. I think the people like that. That's not something that was included in the proposal that Senator Lowenthal has put in or that I've put in. Is that something that would get in the way of my voting for an independent redistricting proposal? Not at all. Going back to what you were speaking about before, Tony, no proposal is perfect. What we need to try and do is get politics out of the process as much as possible. And I think that the proposal that's been put in by Senator Lowenthal, Assemblyman Cancimilla, and myself has tried to do that. We've patterned it after the best proposals in the nation. And obviously we think that the ones we've proposed are the best solutions. But I think it is wrong for people to get caught up in what I would view as not minor details, but things that ultimately won't affect whether it is an independent redistricting process or not. So I'm somebody that supports an independent redistricting process, would support it being done as soon as possible, and clearly have put in my own proposal with Assemblyman Cancimilla, and Senator Lowenthal has put one in, so that people know where I stand on those things that are most important.
What about Assemblyman Cancimilla? What about a vote of the people on this, or at least a vote on the plan itself?
Well, I agree with Assemblyman Richmond. I don't know that it's necessarily a deal killer. I think the problem with the Costa measure in regards to the vote is the way that it's constructed, because if you're going to have a plan that will draw lines, will be used in an election, then it goes out to a vote so that subsequently the lines change. Can that happen more than once? Can that happen two or three times? Do you have – it can be very confusing to have different lines in different elections. Is that a fatal flaw? At this point, I don't think so, because I would take any form of independent redistricting rather than nothing. So I would prefer that the legislature resolve it. I prefer our plan be adopted. But failing that, that may be the only game in town.
There's a couple of questions that our audience has about the competitiveness issue. This kind of goes back to my concern that this state is so red and so blue. I mean, you can't create competitive districts in San Francisco no matter what. And maybe I'd like to ask both of our assembly members here, what do you see as the real factors that can bring competitiveness back? Assemblyman Richmond mentioned the open primary, which I think would have created more competitiveness within the districts. But both of you have very safe seats. Both of you were, I believe, initially elected under the prior plan, the court-drawn plan. So what are the factors that would make it different?
Well, Tony, let me just say, when I was elected, my district was split evenly, 40% Republican and 40% Democrat, and I was elected the first time with an open primary. There's no question that geographically there will continue to be seats in California that will be overwhelmingly Democratic seats or overwhelmingly Republican seats, and an independent redistricting process will increase the number of competitive seats, but it isn't going to make every seat in the state of California competitive. And in fact, I was a very strong supporter of an open primary because I thought it would have brought more competition to every single legislative seat in the state of California. It would have required the representative to answer to the broad political spectrum rather than simply the extremes on either side, on the left or the right. And so I was disappointed when the open primary lost. I thought that was something that would have made all of the districts competitive. But it's very important to recognize that the independent redistricting process definitely will move the state forward in a better government process, allowing for more competitive districts, and is one of the fundamental reforms that we need, fundamental political reforms that we need for better government.
One of the issues that seems to float around here is maybe a sweetener deal. You do this because everyone seems to think it's a pretty good idea, and then you do something about term limits. And the thing that seems to have maybe some chance, some hope for passing with the voters who have not wanted to change term limits would be to allow a member to serve their full time. Senator Lowenthal, you served 6 years in the Assembly, and now you have 8 years in the State Senate. Mm-hmm. These two gentlemen have just served their 6 years in the Assembly. If somebody like the governor or some legislator put on the table, why don't you let them stay 14 years in one house? You'd still have term limits working to term limit them out at a certain point, as it does now. But a lot of people think 6 years is a little bit short in the Assembly. I'll bet most of my colleagues here feel that. What about that or some sweetener getting into this? Would that move the process along? Maybe Assemblyman Cancimilla, if you could comment on that.
Well, I introduced, along with the independent redistricting bill, a bill that would modify term limits, neither of which have even been set for hearings. So that perhaps tells you the level of interest in moving something out of the legislature. Now, whether that can happen through negotiation, I would have to say, as I indicated with the open primary effort, anything can happen when the two sides agree. Our whole effort looking at the reform issue has been focused on the overall need for structural reform, and that's included an open primary, independent redistricting, modification of term limits, because 6 years is not enough time to understand the complexity of issues facing the state, nor is it enough time to be able to work on any meaningful long-term issue. And it just puts, as in the case now, so many of our members at odds with one another on running for other offices. You also are going to ultimately have to face the need for campaign finance reform. You're going to have to face the reality of restructuring how special interest groups can play in elections. All of that's going to have to go into the mix. But clearly, you're going to have to start with the items that are on the table now, and those are redistricting and term limits.
Maybe Senator Lowenthal, if you could comment on that to the degree that this has got to be part of a larger picture.
I concur. Tony, I think you're absolutely right. There is both the policy and the political side. In terms of the policy, obviously the three of us agree that an independent commission is the best way to go and to take the redistricting out of the hands of the legislature. But it's in asking the legislature to voluntarily do that, you're absolutely right. That adds a political dimension for them to do that. And I think that if the governor and the legislature try to come to an agreement on first good policy, which was the best proposal, that would be part of the discussion, would be to do an extension of term limits. I think that has to be seen. Although I support the independent redistricting separate, although I'm a part of the bipartisan group, and I think that there are four specific or five specific structural reforms that we need to do. They've already been pointed out in terms of campaign finance reform, open primary, redistricting. And I support this on itself. As a political realist, to come out of the legislature, I believe that it will have to be part of a deal.
That kind of brings up to another question. You know, at the time of the recall, they said that if they could have, they would have recalled the whole legislature along with the governor at the time. And we now see ballot measures likely to be on some ballot sometime addressing this in a way that some members kind of seem to like and some don't. There's talk about campaign finance reform type ballot measure. We've had those in the past. There's also talk of sort of the nuclear bomb around here, which is go to a part-time legislature, send you all back to your districts for a longer time than you may actually want to. You know, there seems to be a lot of churning among the public at large. And if they were willing 2 years ago to recall a governor, do you think they might just get a taste that they kind of like this sort of reform? And you've talked about the legislature doing it, but maybe isn't there a real possibility that the public's just going to rise up one of these days and decide to do it on its own in ways that you all might not like? Maybe Senator Lowenthal and then the other two members on that.
Well, it might happen right now. As I say, I differ from my colleagues. I think that there are fatal flaws in the Costa and do not support that at all. And so I think – and that comes from the people. And so I think that there may be – those kinds of reforms that come that bypass the legislature, that are based upon an anger at the legislature. My proposal, and I think my colleagues in the Assembly, both Assemblymember Richmond and Cansey Miller, are not done because we're angry, per se, at individual legislators. We just think that the process can be improved. But it's hard to say. You know, the public goes through kind of ebbs and flows in terms of reform. We think that, you know, those of us that are interested in reform think that it's good policy. I do not see now the sense that there's a tremendous movement now to throw everybody out, to throw everything, to change anything. I think that's what the governor is kind of confronted with at this moment, that he thought that there was. But I think that he is finding that he has to limit and he has to become far more focused. And I would like it to be the focus on some of the issues that we're raising. That is not to say that it might not happen again and that people are very satisfied with the legislature. But I don't see that as what is happening. I don't see the legislature being under, at this moment, that kind of attack. Maybe it should be. but I don't think it is at this moment. So I don't see that we're going to see and I may differ from my colleagues, a number of initiatives that coming forward. I think what you'll see is more focused initiatives now, and hopefully that are good policy.
Well, we are likely to see, if we have a special this fall, a whole bunch of initiatives on the ballot. Give me your sense, first, Assemblyman Richmond, of this idea that maybe the public's going to like starting to redraw things, and maybe they're going to decide term limits should be made even shorter, and maybe they'll decide that you all ought to go home now and have a part-time legislature.
Tony, I think your concerns are very appropriate. I do think that if the public had had the choice back on the recall ballot
then
to recall the entire legislature, they would have done that. And I think that the legislature is very unhappy and very dissatisfied with the performance of the California State Legislature. In fact, I believe that all of these initiatives are simply a result of and a reflection of the failure of the legislature to address the issues that California faces, whether you're talking about health care or transportation or any other number of issues, or workers' compensation reform as an example last year. That wouldn't have occurred without the threat of an initiative that had gone directly to the people for their signatures. And so I believe that people are rightfully upset with the lack of performance of the legislature, and their only way to express that dissatisfaction is through the initiative process. And I think that all of the initiatives we are seeing are a reflection of the failure of the legislature to address the issues that Californians face.
Assemblyman Kent Schmeller, what about that? I mean, we can look beyond the redistricting. We're going to have something on teacher tenure on the ballot, probably some sort of a spending cap, and maybe some that are coming from the left as well. Is this kind of a part of a larger picture that we might see a very angry public rise up on a whole lots of issues?
Well, I think as Assemblymember Richmond indicated, the public is dissatisfied and unhappy, and rightfully so, with the performance of the legislature. And part of it is a result of the lack of reform in the process, as we've described today. But part of it is the tremendous influence that we've given to special interest groups that control this process well beyond the levels that I think most of the public understand. When you go into a committee, as I did yesterday, with a very simple bill, a very minor technical change to a statutory scheme that was going to apply to just one county in the state, and the committee had to wait, I had to sit there for 20 minutes or a half an hour before a labor representative could come and tell the chair that it was now okay to take the bill up, that tells you that nothing's going to happen on health care reform or pension reform or any of the other issues, major issues that are facing the state. My fear is that the public, yes, will strike back out of frustration and anger, and they will do something as equally as stupid as they've done in the past when they get angry. And I don't blame them for getting angry, but what they think of as solutions are simply feeding the dysfunction of this place and empowering the groups that truly do control what happens here. So, yes, they could say, okay, we're going to punish them by going to a part-time legislature. We're going to do all of these punitive things, and at the end of the day, what they will do is hand more power to the very people that are creating the dysfunction that is now occurring.
Well, I think we've unfortunately come to the end of our session here, and I want to thank our four legislators for a very thoughtful discussion of what is sometimes kind of a difficult topic. I think we're going to hear a lot more about this over the next several months. The one thing you can be sure of is that this is not an issue that is going away. So on behalf of the Commonwealth Club's Voices for Reform Project and California Common Cause, thank you very much, and I'll gavel this show to the end.